The following program is produced and distributed by KETR.org. You can help by visiting KETR.org and clicking donate.
All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to El Phoenix Mexican Restaurant for the first episode of the Lions Roar Coaches Show for the year. There we go. It's a live show, so we're supposed to make noise. I know it's a little different than the studio like we did in the past. Pleased to kick off the fall season here at A&M Commerce Athletics. I'm Associate AD Josh Mank. I'm here with our head volleyball coach, Craig Case, who started the season last week. Volleyball team getting our first action going a little earlier than everybody else. First off, let's talk about how the summer went for you guys and the preparation and recruiting and all that fun stuff. All the stuff that happens before you actually play.
Well, you just been busy. You know, college volleyball's gotten to the point now where you're never really having any downtime. For us, big part of that is camps and getting out and recruiting and doing different stuff. So we had a really busy summer with camps and bringing a lot of recruits to campus and getting them to work out with our team and through camps. And so that was a lot of fun. And then, you know, the team reported around August 5th, and it just has gone like that. So it's just been a very fast and blurry preseason compared to normal.
Compared to normal, it seems like the roster is not necessarily huge, but we do have a fair amount of new players. What's kind of the breakdown between returning players and new players? Like, what's your percentage or something like that?
It probably a little bit, slightly more than half of our team is new, with a lot of them being underclassmen that we're really hoping to bring up through the ranks. So that way, as we continue to get better as a program, we're not peaking and valleying a whole lot. And that was one of my goals when I took the job here, is to get out of this cycle of, for historically, A&M Commerce would be pretty good for 1 year, and then they'd struggle for three, and then really good for one, and then struggle for three, because they'd get good freshmen in, but didn't have anybody above them or anybody behind them. So that was kind of our goal, is to level that out, and I think we've done that. And we graduated seven last year, and we got six seniors this year, and you know, we'll have four or five seniors next year. So we're in a really good spot as far as those things go.
Talking about those returners, for those people that aren't as ingrained with the program, like some of the people up at this table, for instance, myself, tell us a little bit about who you brought back and some of the kind of, not necessarily all-stars, but names that people should look out for who are returners.
Sure. You know, we've got Jasmine Wacker was the LSC Academic Player of the Year, and she's one of our middles. She had a very good weekend this first weekend, and then her twin sister, Jaren Wacker, has been with us. Both have been with us since they're freshmen. She's an outside hitter. Mariah Oliver is returning. She played a lot last year as one of our starters. Shelly Chaperon was one of the other really fantastic middles in the league, and
we got preseason back. Defensive Player of the Year in the conference,
right,
as well.
Yeah,
what happened? Okay, keep going.
You're losing me. And then, we got Riley Fuentes, was one of our starting setters last year. She's back. Along that lines, Gabby Rosa, who was our other starting setter that finished her eligibility, she's got one semester left, and she's been helping with practices. So it's been really fun having her in the gym. And then Savannah Rutledge was our starting libero. She's back. And then we've got a couple other, I'm probably missing a few, but I know we've got some other role players that have really developed that we're really excited about. You know, one of them, Nikki Ganelli, we redshirted last year, and she, for those that hadn't seen her play since she was in high school, they were really surprised this weekend with how good she has gotten, and we're really excited about her. And then after that, we brought in a whole, I'm hoping you can tell me about the new players.
There's a whole bunch of them. I know that. What's going on with your mic? I don't know what's going on there. But so one of the freshmen that really stood out to me when I was able to go down there and watch this weekend in Stephenville for the first couple of matches was Celeste Vela from Mexico. And we've got a little bit of a more international flavor on the team this year than we have in the past couple of years. Talk about who you've brought in on that aspect.
Well, my Spanish is getting better. I know that.
You're from Minnesota. It's hard not to.
The bar is pretty low on my Spanish right now. So that's coming in from Mexico, and then we've got Danny Santos transferred in from Coffeyville Community College, which was the junior college national champion team, and she was their best player. And so she transferred in, and then we've got another young lady that transferred in who was Danny's teammate at one time, Carolina Machado, who's from Brazil. So we've got three, and then to make sure that we were doing well, we brought Soli back, who's from the Dominican Republic. So we've really spiced it up a little bit this year, and very often I have to ask solely what everybody's talking about, and I just want to make sure they're not talking poorly about me in a different language so I can't hear them. But it's been fun. Yes, Celeste had a really good tournament. You know, she's as good as we thought she was going to be, and we just need her to be better, and she seems up for the task. And then another freshman that really stood out to me was Madison Luther, mm-hmm. who, you know, we didn't know where we were projecting her. We thought she would be good eventually. She will be a really good player in this league, but I thought she did a really good job this weekend. Especially, she was kind of the outside that we went to when we were looking for some answers there, and she was able to help us get us on track and get a couple of wins.
And one player that we haven't talked about here in this room tonight, but as you and I have talked about over the years, she's been hurt for a couple of years and definitely made her presence known in Stephenville the other day. Talk a little bit about Bina Jecham returning from injury and what she brings to the table and power she's got, I guess, is the best way to describe it to somebody who doesn't watch a ton of volleyball.
Yeah, she's explosive. You know, Bina's story is it's interesting because when she was a freshman, we just knew she was a really powerful athlete. So she was a freshman. We got her in some matches, and she hit a few balls and took the air out of them, and then we were really excited. And then
when you say took the air out of them, you're not saying take the air out of the room in lack of excitement. You're saying she hit the ball so hard they were actually flattening.
Actually, one time she literally popped a ball with how hard she hit it into the bleachers. Now, that's not our goal to hit it into the bleachers, but sometimes she lacks power.
Or accuracy. She's got power.
Lacks accuracy. So last in spring of 17, we were really excited about her. She had been working really hard and was really developing. And I would have argued, and not many people would have disagreed with me, she was the best player at our gym. Mm-hmm. And she unfortunately had an injury and blew out her knee and had to miss last year. And she actually was cleared end of October, but we just felt like that time we had already developed all the chemistry and we really liked where our team was at, and it was just too big of a risk. So we were able to redshirt her last year, so she's only a junior right now. And this weekend, we were talking about it. We've been counting on her for so long before she got hurt. We were all kind of sitting around the office going, this was her first real tournament. She'd started and finished this tournament. All the other tournaments she'd played in, she was kind of in and out and mm-hmm. was more of a role player. So it was really exciting to get her going. And yeah, and when we were playing other teams, she's just so explosive. She would attack the ball, and if people dug it, they would just cheer like they won the point, and the play's still going. So it was a lot of fun to get her back out there, and I know she had a good time, and we're looking forward to some big things out of her as well.
So a lot of good roster chemistry, and it is kind of interesting that you start so early because of when the championship is this year compared to normal. But start off 3-1 at the Tarleton Invitational. We can go match by match for a little bit because, I mean, you're the only team that's played a game, so we get to talk about your games the most. We were there for the Harding match. Marcus, my assistant, and I were up 2-1, had 4-5 match points in the fourth set. And you hate to bring that up like specifically like that, but I think that it probably helped you learn a lot about the team, and they learned how to rebound from adversity very early in the season. And you'd much rather have that happen in match one than match 21
than
or something
last
like
one.
That.
Yeah. The biggest thing there is we played a really good volleyball team, and we outplayed them for most of the match, and they picked their spots better. And when they stormed back and took that one from us, we were struggling in that fifth set. And even then, you know, we got it back, and it was about 13-13.
Yeah, I believe we were down 6-1 or 7-1 and came back and got it to 13.
And so, you know, and the thing we talked about, it just brought back all the bad memories I had tried forgetting about with Metro State last year in the NCAA
Which you know
tournament.
I haven't brought up tonight on purpose because I don't want to inflict any PTSD or anything you might have going on.
It's not that traumatic, but it was still one of those deals where I thought about that again, and I just thought, you know, we've got to deal with this. And so after the match, we talked about it, and just, you know, the players that we're counting on, they got to step up all the time. They can't just step up when things are going good. And so that was one of the things we talked about, and then we talked about as a coaching staff. We got together and said, hey, you know what? What are the changes we've got to make that will help move us forward? Because if we don't make any changes, we're just going to keep doing the same things. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we did, and I thought we made some really good changes. The biggest change probably was inserting Madison Luther into the lineup. And she came out and was a real even force and had a pretty productive match the next match against Black Hills State.
So the Lions, so essentially the Lions come in, sweep Black Hills State, and Madison Luther – second in kills in the match with 10 in her first. She didn't play at all in the first match, if
she
I remember right.
No.
And then she comes in the second match and gets 10 kills in a sweep, which is pretty good because you don't have nearly as many opportunities.
Yeah, and so we were, you know, we were real happy with the way she played and had some composure and made some really tough plays that I think other players could have as well. But you know, she had the opportunity, and she the thing I like about her is that she got the opportunity to start. And she has taken advantage of it every time. So I think that's a good sign of a good player.
Moving on to Saturday, you come up against a really good nationally ranked team in Central Oklahoma, who they'd taken a tough loss in five against Midwestern State the day before. So you don't know how they're going to come back from the kind of the mental thing. You're playing fairly early on Saturday morning. A little bit of legs, probably not quite as bouncy as they were on Friday morning, that kind of thing. And you lose the first set and then come back and win three in a row. So that's a really good win right there, considering that's a team that beat us last year and has made the regional. I think they won 30 matches last year, if I remember right, in a really tough region.
Yeah, Edgar does a great job up there with those guys, and we had not beaten them. We might have beaten them once since I've been here. We haven't beaten them in the last 3 or 4 years when we played them. And I knew exactly how they were going to come out that first set, and they came out and played as good a volleyball as I've seen them play. And the biggest thing for us, and we talked about it, is, you know, When we got together and regrouped after day one, we said, "Hey, we came in here and we were going to win four matches, and we didn't. So now we got to win three. We got to go 3-1, and we've got a big test in front of us with UCO." And we really talked about that was going to tell us what kind of team we had. Mm-hmm. And I was real proud of how they stepped up. And you know, somebody that was critical in that, you know, one of our outside hitters, Danny Santos, was having a hard time scoring. They really had her locked down. And we went back to Jaren Wacker, who, you know, the first day struggled a little bit and wasn't quite as good as she wanted to be. And, I mean, she came in, was lights out. And then from the minute she came in, you know, she just put enough pressure on them that they started remembering the loss a lot faster than they wanted. And I thought midway through the third, they started making a lot of uncharacteristic mistakes. And I knew that if we just kept the pressure on and we just kept playing good volleyball, we'd win that match, and I'm glad we did, because that's a good team, and it's a good win. They might win 30 matches again this year. They're a good team.
Talking about that inconsistency at the beginning of the year, how many preseason practices or two-a-days does a volleyball team have before you have to take on true competition like this?
We're usually, you know, our goal is somewhere between 20 and 30 practices. And,
okay, so
you know, we can go two-a-day or three-a-day, however we're going to break it up. You know, but I think the magic number is usually around 22, 24. We get to that, we're in pretty good shape.
So when do you feel like your team normally or expect to find that consistent play against another opponent?
Our goal is conference play, you know, just because it's going to be film and all that. And so, you know, we're probably a little bit ahead of schedule of where we normally have been at this point. But, you know, this first weekend is usually kind of a feel things out and figure out who's going to play, you know, best next to who. And so, you know, I think we took advantage of the additional practice time really well this year and had our team ready to go. So when we did make switches that on the outside looked pretty big, it was just like, all right, it's time to next woman up, I guess. And, and that's how we handled it. So it was a good time. It was a good situation.
All right, we're going to pull off a first for this show. This is called a radio reset. This is what they do. You're listening to the Lions Roar Coaches Show here at El Phoenix, and this is where you clap because we're at a live audience. See, look, we've even got the waiters in the back clapping. If he could bring chips and salsa, I'm sure there's some drink specials. I forgot to get that while I was setting up, but order many drinks. I'm sure they will appreciate it. What? This is live radio. This is how you do it.
I'm in 100%.
Okay, so now let's move on to weekend number two. Let's talk about Colorado Premier Challenge. This is the first time the Lions have got to go. This is probably the biggest non-Division I volleyball tournament there is.
Correct.
If I had to guess, explain to us how you get into it and kind of how it works.
All right, so it's an invitational tourney only. They have four pools of three. And how it's different from most tournaments, like last weekend, we knew the four teams we were playing. Didn't matter how we did on Saturday, or on Friday, excuse me, and we played the same. So at this tournament, it's unique because on day one, you're assigned two teams, and you're going to play them, and then from there, the winner of one pool will play the winner of another pool. So you cross bracket after that, and it is easily the best Division II volleyball tournament in the nation.
If I remember right, you were saying five out of the teams from the Elite Eight.
Last year
were there this year.
Yeah, that includes Concordia St. Paul and West Florida, and those guys squared off in the NCAA championship, and I've known about this tournament for a long time, and we're finally getting to go. So I'm very excited and proud of our team for putting us in that position.
So the Lions will take on Concordia St. Paul, who dropped to number 2 in the national rankings today. They managed to get beat by Ferris State last week.
Swept.
And then our old friends from Metropolitan State. So I'm sure there's got to be some anticipation in your team for the chance to play arguably one of the best teams in the country at any level. They've won 8 out of the last 10 national championships, if I remember right. And then definitely that revenge match at 3:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah, you know, when we got invited to the tournament, the first thing we did is we asked the team, hey, is this something we want to do? Because if you're going to do it, you got to be committed to being good enough to play in that tournament, because it's a waste of time to go there and lose all 4 matches. And then the next thing I did is I talked with Tim and said, hey, I got great news for you. We got invited to this tournament. We might play Concordia St. Paul. No, I told him we were going, and then when we got the brackets, I said, I got great news for you. We get to play Metro State again. He's like, oh, that's great. I go, and maybe bad news, we have to play Concordia right away too. So, but how he and I talked about it is it's a great opportunity, because you know, we talk all the time about being best in class. There's not a better Division I volleyball program than Concordia St. Paul. Yeah. I mean, they are the gold standard, and they have been for a decade. And for us to be able to go in and play and measure ourselves against them is a very positive thing. And then, of course, if you can't get excited about playing Metro State, the team that ended our season last year, then there's something wrong with you. So I think everybody's really excited about the opportunity. You know, I love the fact that we get an opportunity to play Concordia St. Paul. And I'm friends with their coach, and we'll be texting back and forth before this one.
Is that a Minnesota connection?
Yeah. Okay. When I was up in the NSIC. So it'll be a good time, and we're excited about excited about the opportunity to play there, but I think our team's genuinely excited about, you know, our ability, and we're all pretty confident that we're going to be really competitive when we get up there.
Well, we look forward to hearing back from Denver. I wish I could make the trip, but I mean, we've got a little bit going on the night before when you guys are flying out here in town. But I'm looking forward just to the format, sort of the unknown. It makes it feel a little bit like a conference tournament or an NCAA tournament, because you don't know who you're going to play. So it helps you mentally prepare for that kind of tournament challenge that you'll have later on in the year, hopefully.
Well, you know, will. Yeah. I mean, the thing that's exciting about it is it really makes it about really good volleyball. So, you know, we can spend 10 hours game planning for somebody once we have film on them. Mm-hmm. You get into this tournament, you're going to do some stuff. We're going to watch some film on Concordia. We're going to watch our match from Metro last year. But once we get past them, then it's about, you know, who can play volleyball, and who's going to play well, and who's going to figure all those things out. And so I'm really excited about, like you said, just the unknown of that. And I think, A, we're going to learn a lot about ourselves, and B, I think we're going to show a lot of people, you know, where our program has become.
Awesome. Well, Coach Kit, we got to have some fun before you leave.
All right.
It's always fun questions. We've alluded that you're Minnesotan.
Hot dog, is it still a sandwich?
Well, I mean, I can't remember the answer. A, is a hot dog a sandwich?
Yes. Okay. I'm the only one that said yes last year.
Well, then, now, since we're at El Phoenix Mexican Restaurant, yeah, you're wrong.
I'm getting heckled all of a sudden. How did that happen?
Is a taco a sandwich?
No.
What? It's the same thing.
It's a drastically different situation.
I
stand by my hot dog.
I don't understand how a hot dog, which is a connected bun around meat, is a sandwich, but taco, which is connected bread around meat, isn't a sandwich.
No, it's ground.
No, it could be chicken.
It's pulled.
We're gonna have this battle all season.
Yeah.
Do they have tacos in Minnesota? Have you seen a taco before?
If somebody ordered one and brought it up here, it'd help.
Somebody ordered perhaps a plate of nachos, I think is how they say it. I'm sure we could feast on
nachos. Nachos.
How long have you been in Texas now, from the Great White North?
I moved here in 2010.
So what's the biggest thing you miss about the Great White North, and your biggest surprise thing you liked that you didn't think you would when you came down here?
Well, I mean, obviously my family. I miss having them around.
But that's not nearly as funny as what I'm looking for.
What do I miss? You know better than anybody. If I don't say that, my dad's going to email you later.
Yes, true. Your dad will probably still email me.
My mom proofreads the website, and my dad writes the email.
Actually, Marcus, has his dad commented on Facebook yet? No, we have no Facebook comments from Brad yet.
Ken Case, if you're watching,
I'm sure he will later tonight when he watches the replay.
You need to get on top of things. One of the things I missed that I was surprised was, and maybe it's just because of the amount of heat, I miss some colder weather sometimes. And apparently, I had some nice sweaters or jackets or something because I'm always thinking, man, I'm just a little bit colder. But let's see, what else?
So you're a man with no hair on the top of your head.
Correct.
And I'm assuming you haven't worn it that way in a few years. I've seen your headshot. So
you're assuming there's choice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at some point, I'm sure there's some maintenance. So why does a bald man like it cold? Because that sounds terrible.
Well, you can invest in hats.
Okay. So are you a hat connoisseur?
No, I'm not.
did you expect this interview to take this turn?
No. I'm blushing and I'm a little flustered at your line of questioning, sir. I feel like I'm getting attacked just because of hot dogs.
Well, hey, man, we've got to make the good live radio. So, all right, well, I think I can let you go off the hook now. Good luck in Denver. Everybody,
thank you, sir.
Craig Case, head volleyball coach for the Lions. Be right back on the Lions Sports Network.
The program you're enjoying right now was made possible by a group of folks just like you who make contributions to public radio. Support programs just like this one. Visit KETR.org and click donate.
Here live from El Phoenix Mexican Restaurant here in Greenville, first one, and a little bit of a interesting situation here on a Monday night with the Thursday ball game. We're here in the office with head football coach Colby Carthel. Explain to us how this is Monday for the rest of the world, but for us in the football program, it's Wednesday.
That is correct, Josh. It is Wednesday. I don't care what the calendar says. It's Wednesday of game week. So we are busy and actually practicing right now as I speak. I'm actually on the practice field. So it's a little odd that I'm talking in the third show. But it's recorded a little bit previously just so I could be out. We do this. It is a Wednesday night. And so we're getting ready for a big game against A&M Kingsville.
We are getting ready for that big game, and obviously lots of preparation since the last time. A lot of people heard from you if they're listening on the radio. One of the last times they would remember seeing you is December in Kansas City. Give us a little bit of a rundown of what happens in between hoisting that trophy and the confetti and smoke and fireworks going off to back here in Commerce in almost September.
Well, I don't know, a whole bunch of days of running around everywhere, trying to recruit some more players and celebrate the championship and recruit some more players and practice and recruit some more players and get them all ready. So it's been a very busy, hectic offseason. Got a tremendous staff. Again, I had the privilege of going and speaking several different clinics around the country just with winning the national championship, so that was fun. But there are a lot of guys working back home and where we don't skip a beat, and hopefully we can continue to perform at a high level and take this program back to the top this year.
One of my favorite things your program does between the end of your spring ball, which is earlier than most, and then to when you report for fall camp is the Camp with the Champs. It definitely keeps us busy in the summer here, making sure that we're marketing it and compliance and all that fun stuff. Tell us a little bit about how many different places you go, how many people visit our campus, and maybe how many kids roughly you see over the course of a full run of summer camps for hashtag Camp with the Champs.
It was a really busy summer for us. We take our camp, it's kind of our road show. Take A&M Commerce to the masses down in Houston, San Antonio, Syntex, DFW, East Texas. We do a grand total of 17 camps each summer. And like I say, about half of those are on the road and half of them are right here in Commerce. But we saw close to 3,000 kids in camp. Just right at 2,000 of those were here in Commerce. We got that many people here on our campus. And just, you know, that's just, we win at a high level around here, but it's not what we do so much on Saturdays. It's what we do year round, just as coaches and as players, and the commitment level really makes a difference. And you win on a small scale every day, adds up to big things on Saturday. And just to kind of correlate that, we did 17 camps this summer for high school kids. A couple of our opponents in the league, one school did one, another school did three, another school did two. So that shows you, you know, kind of the level of commitment with our coaches and putting forth, you know, the effort it takes to run a championship program.
Speaking of those camps, we did a lot of work on the
the showcase camps here on campus with a you'll know the number. I don't remember it, but a huge number of Division I coaches, and we've had Deion Sanders stop by before. Tell us a little bit about how we're able to bring the big boys to campus and the logistics behind us able to do that without them able to do it on their own campus.
Right. It's just where the NCAA rules are right now with satellite camps. The Division I programs, if they're going to leave their campus, they have to attend a football camp held on another NCAA institution's campus that plays scholarship football. And so that really helps us where we've got a lot of programs that would like to recruit the Metroplex from around the state and outside the state. And so we hosted two different showcase camps, and we had over 49 Division I programs that were in attendance. And I think that at last count, it was like 219 different individual Division I coaches right here on Ernest Hawkins Field at Memorial Stadium, you know, watching some of the very best talent in Texas. And we had guys out here with, you know, five stars and some with no stars, and some kids with 33 Division I offers and some picking up their first. But it was a lot of fun, and it was the big boys. We had Alabama, Ohio State, you know, Oklahoma, Texas, A&M. They were all here, and it was really great for our program, great for the city of Commerce, great for the city of Greenville. Some people realized you couldn't find a hotel on those weekends in either one of these towns because there were so many kids coming to each of those camps.
Looking back over the course of the summer and celebrating the championship, and this kind of our last chance before we really talk about 2018 football to look back really hard at 2017 and truly celebrate it, what's one of those celebration moments that really stood out to you after we left Kansas City?
You know, I think the Night with Champions that we hosted here on our campus, it was there was a lot of great moments and opportunities for us as coaches and players to celebrate. But that Night with Champions was really, really special, just to see the outpouring of support within this community and the surrounding communities, East Texas region, the university system, and everybody just showed out and decked out and had a great time, a great meal, and all the money that was raised benefited our players in terms of their summer school scholarships. And so every player on our team that needed or wanted to take summer school was able to get that done and get it paid for. And so that really helps our program on the football field because they're here and they're training. But more importantly, it helps these guys graduate so much faster. And that bottom line is the reason why we play the game. They're student athletes, and it's student first for a reason. So they're here to get an education. Football is just the tool that got them here. But that was a great, great turnout to celebrate, and just a real windfall of benefits from that night with champions.
As a coach, I'm sure you mentally prepared to win a championship for years and years and years. You think about the process for years and years, what you would do if you win, that kind of thing. What was kind of the biggest surprise to you about winning? What happens when you win a championship?
Probably just the total chaos there on the field afterwards. You know, you look back and you didn't get all these pictures taken that you'd like to have, and it was just nuts. You know, confetti was flying, and then it was over, and you're like, what did we just do? I know it's captured in our minds, but I've got a horrible memory and I forget things a lot. So I just wish I'd have taken a few more pictures with a few more family and friends and players and everything else. But it was a complete rat race because, let's be honest, we didn't know what in the world we were doing. We'd never been there before, but we sure had fun doing it. And it was a great night, and maybe we'll get the opportunity to do it again some years in the future.
All right, well, done looking back at the 2017 season. You're listening to the Lions Roar Coaches Show on the Lions Sports Network. Looking ahead to the 2018 season, a lot of questions, but a lot of known quantities as well. Let's start on the offensive side of the ball. There are surprises coming up, unknowns having to replace the quarterback, but let's talk a little bit about the skill positions first. The guys that will be doing a lot of work with the ball in their hand. What have you seen in camp, and who are some of the guys who've stood out?
Well, we're broadcasting here from Greenville, Texas, and there's one of Greenville's finest right there behind center, or, you know, at the tailback position, that's doing a great job. Crandall Hale had a phenomenal freshman year last year, and he's back for his sophomore campaign and has really had a great offseason, a great summer, and he's poised to have a really big year this year, I think, toting the rock. So excited about him and his future. The receiver tight end position, you know, we've got Vincent Hobbs, returning senior, preseason All-American, NFL prospect, really good player out of Mesquite, Texas, that has a chance to, he's a fan favorite just because he gets that ball in his hand and he is mean. He doesn't look to get tackled. He looks to run over somebody. So
have
he's
you ever,
fun to watch.
Have you ever seen one man tackle Vincent Hobbs in practice or a game?
That I have not seen yet, but, I hope I don't. But he looks for contact, and he's fun to watch. Got some other receivers. I think he'll have a big year, chance to really showcase Marquise Wimberly. Had a big touchdown catch in the national championship game. He's looking really, really good through fall camp. So going to be a fun group to watch.
You've been coaching in this league for a while. In between Carandal Hale, you said, from Greenville, and E.J. Thompson, the other freshman last year. He was a true freshman. Carandal was a redshirt freshman last year. E.J. from San Antonio, you got two freshmen at that position combining for almost over 1,000 yards rushing over the course of the season. Have you seen in the Lone Star Conference a two-headed running back monster like that that is so young and gets to play together for 4 years?
Actually, I have, and that was way back during my days as a ball boy watching Johnny Bailey and Heath Sherman in the backfield of Texas A&I, who happens to be our opponent. So those guys were unbelievable. I think Sherman is still the all-time leading rusher for the Philadelphia Eagles, and Johnny Bailey won the Harlan Hill 3 out of 4 years running. The only reason he didn't win his freshman year is because he wasn't eligible. So those were the two very best in the same backfield. But these two guys that we've got are really, really special, and I think are going to put up some big numbers and have already done something that Johnny Bailey and Heath Sherman hasn't, and that was win a national championship. So they're off to a good start with their career, and really look forward to seeing what they do this fall and over the next 3 years combined.
The guys that paved the way for those guys, the offensive line, a lot of returning talent, but a little bit of a reconfiguration in some positions, a lot of new guys as well, including at center and obviously at left tackle with the departure of Jared Machado. Give us a little bit of update on how Jared's post-collegiate career went, and then talk a little bit about this year's offensive line, how we're going to start out.
Right, Jared, offensive lineman of the year in the Lone Star last year, and had a tremendous All-American career for us. He ended up making a team with the Indianapolis Colts and got to mini camp and then got hurt. So he's since been released on the injured reserve, and I know is working to get healthy and get back to it. But guys up front this year, we do have a new center. It's a freshman named Travis Daft out of Prosper, Texas. He's going to be a guy I think we can build around for the next 4 years. Really a phenomenal player, and we're really excited about him. We've moved a young man started for some last year at center before he got hurt, Christian Hernandez. We've moved him to right guard, doing a good job. So he'll be a sophomore there. We have a senior at left guard with Jordan Smith. Got a lot of starts and a lot of wins under his belt. Starting over there at the left tackle will be Mr. Amon Simon, who at this point in his career is ahead of where Jared Machado was. So excited about him and what he brings to the table. Going to be really good. The right tackle, we've got Malik Ellis, who's returning and started for us the past 2 years and a really, really good player. And Richard West, redshirt freshman, backing him up, has really been pushing him and has had a tremendous camp, a young man out of East Central down there and outside, just east side of San Antonio. So we've got some really talented players up front. We are going to be young, and that is not an excuse. Our expectation is to play at a very high level, and I'm excited about those young guys because they're good football players, and so anxious to see what that group does.
You and I have both been around Division II football for a while. You've got a few years on me. I won't do numbers, but this is my 13th Division II season working at this. This offensive line, they seem huge. They seem physical. I've gotten used to the size now, but compared to a lot of Division II lines, they're pretty big. Is the size their strength, their physicality, mentality? What do you see that makes this offensive line special?
I think with the starting five, it's their physicality and mentality. They just get after you, and they're athletic and they're in good shape. The size really comes in when you get to our backups. Durante Shaw at the backup right guard position, he goes about 6'5", 380. And then Emerald, I'm going to let you pronounce his last name.
We'll deal with that on game day.
Falatua Papa.
I think that's close.
Pretty close. He is 6'8", 375 pounds. So those two men lined up next to each other, you got, close to 800 pounds on just the right side. So, it'll be If our two's getting the game, it's going to be rough on somebody.
One last position we've got to talk about on offense, and I'm not going to say we've ever avoided it on purpose, but it's the question that everybody wants to ask, so you have to close with it. Tell us who's going to start at quarterback and how the progression since the departure of the Harlan Hill Trophy winner, Luis Perez, has gone at that position.
Right. Well, we're had three juniors coming to camp in a quarterback battle with Chase Pemberton and Preston Wheeler and Kane Wilson transfer that came in. They've all performed at a very, very high level and done a great job. I think we can win a bunch of ball games with any of them under center, but it'll be Preston Wheeler that you know gets the nod. He's done a really good job setting himself apart through our live scrimmages and just taking care of the football and leading the offense the way we need that position to. Kane Wilson will still have a big role in the offense as well and everything. So I think we're in really good shape at our quarterback position and just excited to see that whole unit get on the field and see what they can do this fall.
Moving over, flip the field. Defensive side of the ball, you've been a defense guy your whole life pretty much. Defensive line, linebackers, secondary, 9 returning starters from the national championship run. New defensive coordinator to break in, new system to an extent. How have they performed in camp and what have you seen and how positive are you about this defense? Because it's hard not to be.
No, we're really excited about what we've got coming back on defense, and it was a fun offseason, you know, with an opportunity for some change. Coach Deason got him a big-time Division I job, and rightfully so. He did a great job the past 5 years with our defense, but that left us an opening, and we went out and hired what I felt like was the best defensive coordinator that we faced over the past 4 or 5 years since I've been here, and that's Scott Power, and his resume speaks for itself. He's been National Coordinator of the Year, and he's won national championships and competed for others at different levels, and just the tremendous job he did at Central Washington, taking them from a, you know, 500 team to, you know, statistically one of the nation's best defenses in any level. So really excited about him. He's come in and didn't get to go through spring ball, so it's a little bit pressed for time, but he worked hard with our staff and marrying some terminology and some of the things that we've done very, very well around here for a long time and adding some new wrinkles himself to the defense. So it's been a lot of fun, and it's going to be really exciting to see them in action. I know defense is the hardest thing to practice during camp because you just want to hit somebody. And we try to practice really smart around here and don't do a lot of live action. So I know these guys are chomping at the bit to get out there and bang heads with somebody on another team.
We'll start up front looking at these positions, the defensive line, starting with our man Big Mike. Mike Anoha leading the way out there on the edge, but you've got a lot of returning talent up there as well.
You bet. Big Mike obviously garners a lot of the attention just when he steps on the football field. His physical presence, he's about 6'5", 250, and just a tremendous player there on the edge. He's, you know, I think some NFL teams have him graded out as a fourth or fifth round talent. So he's going to be fun to watch this fall. On the other side, Josh Reynolds has played really, really well through camp. He's kind of finally had the year in the summer we've always expected him to. He's from Paris High School, and I think has a chance to have a big year. He was playing very, very well last year before he got hurt in the playoffs. So those guys up front. Inside, we return some of our very best players, Peyton Searcy and D.D. Fletcher, and you know, there's a Pierre Leonard. A lot of guys have had a lot of reps and have some plays under their belt. So We've played a lot on defense before, and I think we'll continue to in the future.
Going to drop a trivia question on you here before we go to the linebackers and secondary. There's two guys that have played in every game for the last 3 seasons. It's linebackers and secondary. That's why we drop it in now. Do you know who they are? Because we do rotate a lot, but you're a stats guy too. I know you like to look at the data just as much as I do. Do you know who the two guys who have played in every game the last 3 years are?
I'm going to guess it's Brooke Sadoff and Danny Huckabee.
Incorrect on one. You got Brooke Sadoff right. Chris Smith is the other.
No.
I think Danny missed one game. Now, that was before I was here, so they might have kept the stats wrong.
But you had me off because I know there's been 3 players that have played in every game the last 3 years, and you don't
I was only
know.
Here for 2, so I can't
you Well,
can't,
you know the 2. Where's the 3rd?
Oh, that would be – we're getting to the end of that.
Wow, you're forgetting a – biggest man on the field, little baby Kristoff.
Well, we got to go special. It goes offense, defense, special teams.
All right. So we'll go Chris Smith. All right. Poor Danny Huckabee. Must have missed a game. Shame on him. I'll get after him at practice tonight.
It's still
amazing. You bet.
Well, we'll start with the linebackers and the most returning depth there. I mean, between Brooke Setoff, Garrett Blubaugh, and Nemo Bebahani, especially right there. Those guys had a ton of tackles in the playoffs. But that is a heck of a deep group at linebacker with those three guys and the rest of them as well.
No doubt. You know, Brooks has been named to several preseason All-American teams, and rightfully so. I think he's poised to have a really big senior year. Garrett Blubaugh, the Elite 90 Award winner, maybe the smartest guy in college football. He's actually foregoing his senior year to go to med school, so we're going to go ahead and call him a senior this year and send him out with a bang. So he's been so much fun the whole time he's been here. And Nima Bebahani, I call him the Persian Punisher. He is a fantastic football player, has a great instincts and nose for the ball. And those three just rotate in and out, and there is not a drop-off between any of them. They do a really good job. Mark Westbrook's another that, you know, has been a really good player the past 2 years as a true junior. So those guys have, I think, we're in really good shape there at the linebacker position.
In the secondary, almost an embarrassment of riches when everybody's healthy between the corners and the safeties. When you go and look at the two deep, you've got guys who played a ton of snaps like Chris Smith. You've got your Danny Huckabees, people who already have their degrees. Reggie Kincaid, Alex Shiloh, only a redshirt sophomore, but a ton of snaps. And there's almost not enough positions back there for as much talent as we have in the secondary.
Right. You know, you got DJ White out there who's a true senior that's played phenomenally for the past 3 years, and he's – you know, getting a lot of attention. The NFL scouts come through. Anytime you got a 6-foot corner that can run like he does. So, Jalen Cooper, got some new guys coming in. Felipe Chambers has had a great year here. He got here in January. And then L.A. Dawson, all conference player at West Texas A&M, got his degree and is a graduate transfer here. So, really excited about that group. The best thing about them is they can flat run. And so we're going to be really fast. If we do make a mistake, we'll, you know, good things happen to those who run, and we can run really well back there. So I think we're going to be in pretty good shape to have a really talented secondary this fall.
Seems like the defense all coming together, and you're right, three guys who've played every game in their career. I can't believe that I've left that out.
Or Kristoff.
Kristoff. Yeah. I mean, Kristoff Martinez, little baby Kristoff, the best nickname in college football, I think, at this point. And I know he loves it, but you've got a kid there, maybe the best story in college football, third leading scorer in all divisions, returning right now, leading active scorer in Division II, could break the Lone Star Conference record. I mean, we could talk about this kid all season and probably will.
Mm-hmm.
But how? I mean, tell us a little bit about what his teammates have elected him to, and how rare that is.
Right, Kristoff Martinez is a phenomenal human being, and really excited about him and his path here and all he's done. Like I said, already got his degree, working on a master's and 4.0 graduate, and he can sure put the ball through the uprights, does a great job. His team elected him as captain earlier this fall camp, which is almost unheard of for a kicker, punter. Some people don't even recognize him as true football players, but here they get elected captain. So yeah. It's awesome. And Kristoff, you know, for those that don't know, you know, is an undocumented immigrant. He swam the river when he was 8 years old and has just done nothing but, you know, good things since he's been here. And just I know it's a hot button topic with the political climate today. And there's not a better poster child for what a true dreamer DACA student should be than Kristoff Martinez. And we're just tickled to death that he's on our football team.
And then tell us a little bit about punter and the other specialist positions, just so we know what we're seeing out there. We do have a returning punter as well.
Right. Tristan Perry is coming back. He plays a true freshman last year, did a really good job handling those duties, punting the ball. And Jake Viquez is back as well, left-footed kicker punter. So we're in good shape in the specialist. Returned Drake Flores and brought in Wyatt Leaf, handled some of the deep snapping duties. And so I think just with our depth and our speed at receiver and DB, I think we'll have some have a chance to be really, really talented in the special teams facet, which, that, you know, we pride ourselves, that's a punch no one ever sees coming, and we put a lot of emphasis on that, and hopefully that shows up Thursday night.
You and I have probably done a season preview conversation now with either ourselves or a media member or something. Seems like about 50 times at this point in the year, and now it's time to finally play some football. Thursday night, national TV audience, Division II showcase. How excited are you personally to be ready to play some football again for the first time since December?
We're tickled to death. It's just, it was a great year last year, and it's fun to celebrate, but that's what's neat about football is you got to have a short memory, and I think this 2018 bunch has a chance to be really, really special. Got some great storylines, some great kids, and, last time we were out there at Memorial Stadium as a packed house, over 10,000 people for that national semifinal game in mid-December, and so we're excited to see it, full again on Thursday night. Not very often do you get a chance in East Texas to come out and be on national TV, ESPN, so we're hoping everybody from the East Texas region shows up in full force and packs out Memorial Stadium and hopefully rooting the Lions on to a big win.
Taking on the Hoggies, one of the longest rivalries in Texas football that's active, more in the Lone Star Conference championships than most people count. Between the two of us, you and I have dropped some of the names from that rivalry throughout the day on both sides of the ball. How interesting is it to you to start off the season with playing such a big rival, an important game already, and playing a personal friend in Coach Wilkinson?
You bet. It's Texas A&I, East Texas State. It does not get any bigger than that when you're talking Lone Star Conference football. I think well over 50 Lone Star Conference titles between the two programs, and it goes way, way back. The Gil Stinky and Ernest Hawkins days, and you got John Randall, Hall of Famer, Darryl Green. You got Harvey Martin, Wade Wilson. Richard Ritchie was a great quarterback for them back in the day. Johnny Bailey, Heath Sherman, we talked about before. Just some of the very, very best coaches and players that have ever participated in this game, the Lone Star Conference, are tied back to this rivalry. Playing for the Chenal Cup. You can throw first game of the year. You can throw the rankings out. You can throw ESPN out. It doesn't matter if you're playing on a, 100-yard pasture out in, East Texas somewhere or South Texas. It's going to be a brawl. It's going to be a great game. It's going to be a lot of fun to be a part of on both sides of it. And it is awesome, relationship I have with their head coach, Darren Wilkinson. We're good friends. We go to Alaska together each summer and coach them kids up there in that state and try to do a little fishing and just relaxing in the cool Alaskan summer. So we have a lot of fun together and our staffs and recruiting against each other. And he does a great job with that program. So it'll be two really good, talented teams doing battle Thursday night. So I hope everybody comes out and supports them all.
And before we let you go, we do have to get a little X's and O's, a little coach speak preview. You were telling me they've got a new defensive coordinator as well down there at Kingsville. What can we expect out of the Hogs?
Well, they returned some really good players. I know they've gotten a couple tailbacks back that they were missing last year, and so expect them to be very formidable on offense and always have been. Defensively, they had some issues last year, and they've made some changes and some really good changes. They brought back Haskell Buff, who's been a longtime DC in this league and was part of some of the glory days back in the A&I years and early 2000s with Kingsville, and so he knows how to win, how to recruit, and how to coach defense. So we're expecting to have our hands full and breaking in a new quarterback against a new DC. It's going to be a tough challenge for us, but I know our coaches and our players are ready to meet that and hopefully be ready to play at a very high level Thursday night. Should be a fun night of football.
All right, Coach Carthel, we're glad that you could find a way to join us, even though this week is a little thrown off schedule-wise for what we're used to. We will see you in person next Monday night over at Taqueria La Ventana for the first in-person Lions Roar Coaches Show for Coach Carthel. Mexican Food Mondays for us.
I'm all about it. I tell you what, can't go wrong. So appreciate you having me on, and I may be tuning in, listening to myself live on the practice field currently tonight, even though it's this afternoon.
I was going to say, somehow East Texas, we invented time travel.
There you go. Well, y'all have a good night. Thank you. Go Lions.
Thanks a lot, Coach Carthel. Thanks a lot for watching and listening to Lions Roar. I've been Josh Mank. Go Lions.